All right, can you give me a test? Test.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Wonderful. Joining me in the Catalyst studio is Richard Knowles, the president of Richard Knowles and Associates. And we're going to talk about complexity and collaboration. You recently gave a really great talk at Aspect that people were raving about. And we wanted to dig in to some of the highlights of that. And I guess we should start with just laying out the different layers of complexity and problems.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's important to understand that there are really different categories of problems, and we need to approach these categories in different but complementary ways. So the first category is a simple problem, like my getting dressed in the morning. I sort of grab what happens to be handy, and that seems to work most of the time.
You look great, by the way.
The complicated problems are ones where there are many steps, like running a payroll. And you can go from A, B, C, D, and you get to E, and that's fine. And most of the time, organizations deal with their problems as if they're all quite linear, A, B, C, D. And that works for some, particularly if you've got a payroll that's all set and you know what to do. But as soon as you get a diverse group of people together, and a diverse group can be almost any group of people, looking at a problem that's really a complex problem and is one that's not linear, but it gets loopy. We talk about A, B, C, and then have to go back and check on B, and then go to E and have to go back and check on A to be sure that what's happening. And as you think about most of your discussions, that happens in meetings. And it's not a failure of the leader, but it's the nature of the beast that forces us to happen to be circular. And so we come at trying to work on complex problems using tools that are appropriate at that level of understanding. And we try to help create with the groups of people a common language, some common understanding about what the issues really are. And they develop it. I don't develop it. They develop it as we talk together. People begin to develop a shared understanding. And very importantly, we all agree at the beginning that if we want to go from a problem area to some successful solution, we have to be able to work together, and perhaps in a way that's different than in the past. We've got to help each other. We've got to tell the truth. We can't play games. No personal attacks. Stuff that one guy in a group told me, well, that's just what my mother taught me, or told me rather. I said, well, why don't you do what your mother tells you? It's that kind of simple stuff, but we make it explicit and open, and the people co-create that. And when they do that, they can then hold each other accountable. And so for that particular topic, when they get together, this is the way in which they work. And that becomes a very important, because we have to open the space for it's okay for people to talk and to share. And if the space is not open, people will not go in.
So you've got two sort of major strategies or ways or processes or my theories on how to do that. The first, the process Enneagram, and the second, strategic doing. So let's start with the process Enneagram, and can you kind of break down what that strategy looks like?
The process Enneagram is a 9-term system that we look at. Who are we? What are we trying to do? What are the problems? What are the relationships like? For do we trust each other? What are our ground rules and how we're going to work? What are we actually going to do? How are we going to create and share information? How are we going to learn? Because the process is onward and onward. And how are we going to organize ourselves? And what does the outside world look like? So these are fairly simple questions worked on in that order. It's important to use that order. These are all interconnected, and these all can change, and they can influence one another as we go forward. And we keep track of what people say up on the wall so people can see the picture, and they can see the whole and the parts and the interconnection of the parts. Strategic doing was developed by a guy named Ed Morrison over about the last 30 years, just as I was working on developing the process Enneagram. Their basic philosophies are the same. The approaches are slightly different. Ed's work seems to be the strategic doing works well for more for community-type groups. Mm-hmm. Process Enneagram seems to work quite well with more focused groups like you'd have in an organization, but they can overlap and be used. And each of them are simple steps that anybody can engage in, and they're worked and they've proven over many years.
Tell us a little bit about strategic doing.
Well, strategic doing means that we get together with a community. Maybe there's a problem that everybody's worried about in the community. Mm-hmm. For example, the problem in Flint, Michigan with water that Ed helped them with. Mm-hmm. And the community came together and they began to talk about that. And what is it we want to try to do together? They worked those kind of things out. And then he helped create the space where they could talk openly together about that. And it was safe.
Right.
So people weren't picking on each other and that kind of stuff. Right. And that's really critical because, you know, none of us want to be picked on. We'll shut down. We won't share. And then they began to talk about, okay, what kind of gifts, what kind of resources do each people bring? And sometimes people don't know if they got anything, and actually they do. They bring some knowledge. They may bring a skill about how to do something. Maybe somebody's really good at cooking pies, and we have pies at our meetings.
Right.
So people bring their different skills together. So everyone's contributing with the thinking. Everyone's contributing with physical things to go forward. And then they identify some problems that are ones that they can get a hold of. Sometimes it's called low-hanging fruit by some organizations. And they begin to do the work. And one of the disciplines they have is what he calls 30-30. After 30 days, we're getting together, and we're going to review this again, and we're going to set up the meeting for the next 30 days. So the stuff does not go away.
Right.
So the conversation and the dialogue is a moving target and keeps moving. And they create a living plan, just as I do with the process Enneagram. Both of these plans are living and evolving, because tomorrow is different than today. And we need to have plans that can adjust quite quickly as conditions around us change.
It would assume then that with both of these processes, you know, when you stick a bunch of people in a room and ask them to work on a problem without an infrastructure, you know, that's where it falls back on interpersonal dynamics. So, you know, the alphas, the betas, the strong, the weak, the mean, the nice, the passive, the active, and whatnot. And so by putting this framework in place, you're sort of force aligning people or guiding people, I say, into an alignment because they're focused on these, you know, these more procedural things.
What we do is we invite the people to come together about a problem they share in common, a concern. And then we ask them to participate, ask them to talk about, what do you think about this? And so it's not a matter of forcing people to do anything, but rather an invitation.
Right.
Asking for their help. Can you come in and help us? What do you know?
But they were doing that anyway. I mean, without this process, they were going to come to a meeting and work on a problem.
That's true. But engaging in the way in which I'm talking about here, we start to bring a shared understanding, shared meaning, shared insights, and they can come with their different perspectives and share those and help each other understand where they're all coming from.
Right.
And in the course of doing that, they begin to come together and find areas in common that they can do things that are important and they can do them together.
So my point was that this framework replaces the sort of ad hoc interpersonal framework that develops without this sort of guide.
That's right. It's a discipline-focused conversations.
So when you do that, do you find, especially, you know, because I know you've worked with people, I think you mentioned City of Niagara for 4 years. Do you feel like when you start down this road, there's a quick jump into it because, you know, the energy is kind of flown up into the air with this framework. But once people get comfortable with this framework, do a lot of the bad habits creep back in? Do a lot of the interpersonal dynamics creep back in over time?
Those are good questions. Let me talk about Niagara Falls leadership team. I met with the mayor and her leadership team before they were all sworn into office for a couple of hours one evening, and we developed our plan around the question, how can we be the best leadership team possible for our city? And they developed a lot of the answers to the kind of questions. We put them up on a big chart on the wall. And for each meeting, which they had every week, the city manager had the chart on the wall, and he would ask each person, how did we do last week? And they would talk about one item or two. They wouldn't try to do the whole thing. And they would talk about the stuff that worked or the stuff that didn't work. No judgment, no criticism, but everybody giving a voice. And over the course of time, talking that way, things changed. And people began to make improvements. And one of them was, we don't have to keep buying insurance from the most expensive provider in town. One I found quite fascinating was that for the first time, the sewer people and the street people began to talk together. And they discovered that it was a lot more economical if we fixed the sewers before we paved the streets rather than after we paved the streets and then do it again.
Mm-hmm.
It was not terribly esoteric things. These are common things that really reasonable people can figure out together and do, which make a great difference in the cost of the city. And over the 4 years, they took $16 million out of a $62 million budget, which is a pretty nice savings. So as people who want to solve an important problem, the problem can't be trivial. It's got to be important so people are willing to apply themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, it's fun to watch what happens because most people really want to do good and feel good about their work.
Sure. So it seems like this really is the complexity, the main to, I won't say reduce the complexity, but make the complexity more solvable or more manageable. You're actually just taking the human dynamic out of a lot of it. Because before, for some reason, probably some random psychological reason, those two, the sewer guys and whoever the other ones, weren't
talking.
The street people. And through this framework, you sort of diffused whatever that was and made this the conduit instead of that pre-existing, you know, interpersonal conduit.
And they could both be winners, not just one or the other. They could both be winners. You know, the human dynamic is always there. But we have to come out so we can be win-win rather than win-lose.
Right.
We have to come out with reconciliation rather than compromise, because compromise gives you less than what you came in with. Reconciliation is we discover something new as we talk and we can build on it. And that's always a lot more fun.
I know you had mentioned that strategic donors, excuse me, fit best in more civic or community situations. So, and I would assume that's more of a weak matrix, right? Where there's a lot of people who are sort of have their own power sources, like when you bring multiple organizations together versus a top-down, like a corporation. So how do you adjust when you don't have that power structure?
Okay, I suppose I go into the community and I got four or five block clubs that are arguing over a shopping mall situation. I sit down with each of the leaders of the block club one-on-one and talk about, what is the problem? What do you think? Would you be willing to get together with the others if we could talk? And it's an experiment. Mm-hmm. They're not committing themselves forever. And after talking to all of them, bring them together and begin to talk about what I learned and heard and check with each. Is that what you're saying? In the course of that, people begin to get comfortable because they've been heard. And it's being fed back to them as they've been heard.
Mm-hmm.
Without ridicule, without condemnation or any of that. And then we begin to talk about, is that really what we want to do? Who are you? What do you bring here to help solve this problem? And they'll tell us things. And then we say, what is it you really want to do? And as they begin to talk, they begin to develop clarity about what they really want to do. And so you don't have 15 different things out there. You focus in it, a fairly narrow thing to begin with. And then we talk about, okay, if we really want to do that, how are we going to have to work together? Well, we're going to tell the truth. We're going to help each other. We're going to put down some of the ill will that was coming along for this problem. Everything else may be the same, but for this problem, this is how we're going to work as we come together. And we can hold each other accountable for those agreements. So they co-create their future. They co-create their agreements on how they want to work. And my role as a facilitator is to keep asking them questions to do that and try to invite everybody into the conversation. Always there'll be a few people who are fairly dominant and a few people who will be very quiet. And so I've got to help cool down the real dominant ones and invite the ones that are a little quieter into the conversation. And there are ways to do that. And people will come. Most people will come. Some may not. And I've got to be careful not to make them feel too bad. One of the things I like to do is have people sit in a circle, not behind a row of tables. Because in a circle, just sitting there, you don't have anything to hide behind. And so we begin to move. That sometimes makes people very uncomfortable.
Right.
But it shoves them into a different space. So they already know that this thing is different than the same old same.
There's an equality built into that. It's like the Knights of the Round Table. They sat at a round table because they're all equal knights.
That's right. And it's not one of these where some are more equal than others. It's a matter of people coming together, bringing their skills, volunteering things, giving things because they want to, because the problem they've come together about is so important. They all want to get it better.
Right.
Such as the problem with the water in Flint, Michigan, where the water pipes were a problem. Everybody wanted them more clean. Nobody wants to have bad water for your kids.
Right.
I've worked all over the world, and one of the things I find is most people love their kids. Most people want their families to be better. We have more in common than we have different.
Mm-hmm.
We can get all wound up on the differences very easily.
And this is something that's near and dear to my heart. It's not an inefficiency of being human, but it's that humans have different perspectives, and there's some truth in each of those perspectives. And the idea is to be able, I love that somebody's quote that says, intelligence is being able to handle multiple, sometimes even contradictory perspectives in your head and be able to make sense of it all.
Well, that can happen when we come together in a spirit of wanting to solve an important problem and with ground rules that we don't attack each other and make people feel poor or beat up or whatever. And people will begin to come together. And sometimes the meetings can be very intense. I had one meeting where a fist fight almost broke out between the several fractions. And we came out on our feet and did well. But we have to take the time. And time is one of the important things. I can't rush it.
Right.
So if we get into a conversation, then we keep working on it. And we keep working on it. And we put the answers up on the wall so it's all visible and everybody can see it. And for a lot of people, having something they said posted on the wall of a meeting is a unique experience. They've never had that much acknowledgement about what they have said.
Right.
And we don't have to blow a lot of smoke around it. It's just, I said that up there on the wall. And that's pretty important. A lot of people feel very good about that.
It's validation. This is so similar to what we're trying to do with the Catalyst, because we look at the problems or opportunities in St. Petersburg and the conversations, there is no place where you can actually have a safe, using your words, conversation about things, because the traditional news is a little bit more one way. You get a few op-eds or whatnot, but it doesn't allow for the interactivity of social media. you know, social media has this great, I call it idea stacking, where, you know, people could put an idea out and get emotional support with likes and hearts. And also people can add on to the idea and, you know, bringing solutions and different angles and perspectives. But those almost without fail, if it's of any real complex issue, get hijacked by rude people, negative people, so on and so forth. So the whole impetus behind with the Catalyst is that, A, we're inviting our thought leaders to put the content on the platform, but we're actually moderating the comments. So it's sort of a forced way of implementing what you're talking about, where anything that hijacks the conversation or closes the mind to ideas doesn't even make it up. And so as a result, we're getting these lovely conversations that are rolling with thought leaders contributing and, you know, a nice back and forth that actually gets somewhere without being hijacked. And I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that's a great way to do it. I find doing it with the people actually in the room together is very powerful, because a lot of communication, as you well know, is not verbal. It comes across in body language of one way or another. And it's also important for the people to be able to look at each other. And if you say one thing and I say another, right then we can work on it. The social media thing is, it's when I get back to it the next day or tonight, and I maybe already been out of shape because somebody else has bumped me. So it's more difficult, I think. Now, after the group has met for a while, social media might become very powerful. But I think face-to-face interaction, at least initially, is really, really important for people to do this stuff. And so for a community like St. Pete, it's not that big a community. We get people together. You know, it doesn't take 3 hours to get across the city like in Houston or anything like that.
Right.
So there's the opportunity for people to come together if they want. If they want, that's really important.
Yeah.
That means the problem has to be important.
You know, and the other thing that we're trying to be conscious of is with the human dynamic element of it, again, with these closed loop sort of environments, you have the benefit of everybody being kind of forced to be in the room, right? So the boss says, get in the room, let's figure this out. The mayor says, get in the room, let's figure this out. And we're in a situation where that we can't. And usually it's the most aggressive people or the most boisterous people who would show up to something like that and bring their thoughts, and the quiet people who often have amazing ideas that don't. So we're constantly challenged with, and again, that's where I think the safe environment and, you know, this respect for intellect and all these things will hopefully make it worth the softer thinkers' time to come in and contribute.
Well, it's important to have in the conversation all sorts of people. So if I go out and meet with, say, the Block Club people, example, I'd ask them, who are the people you think ought to be here? And I'd ask them, what about some of the real quiet people that are really kind of stalwarts in the community but don't get out and get mixed up in some of this stuff? I'd like them there as well. But I'd also like the loudmouths. All the particular dimensions need to be engaged. And then you bring them together and you begin to sort stuff out. And I've done this in different cultures. It doesn't matter, really. I've worked in Malaysia and Australia, New Zealand and Italy and Canada and the U.S. And these kind of processes, as I said earlier, if people are willing to talk about this important problem, it never fails. You got to stick with it. You got to come back to the next meeting. Some people might not, but in all the workshops I've run, and I've run hundreds of them, nobody's ever walked out, and they all come back the next day if it's a two-day one, which has been kind of a nice thing to see what's happening.
That's a badge of honor.
It's because it's the problem of that they have identified, and these are the solutions that they have identified. And most of the time I've found that the answers to the people's problems, about 90% of them are already in the community or in the business. But they don't know because they're not talking to each other. And when you begin to develop a shared picture of what's happening, people are astonished at how much they know and how much they can actually begin to do, which they didn't feel they could do because they didn't talk, they were disconnected. And change happens in organizations or in communities, one conversation at a time. I was talking last summer to a person living behind the Iron Curtain. I said, I think the Berlin Wall came down because there were millions of conversations on street corners and bars and kitchens. And at some point, the potential energy built. And some guy went out with a sledgehammer and started to beat it down, and nobody killed him. And the whole thing collapsed. There wasn't a peace conference. There wasn't anything that happened. It was somebody, and nobody knows who that will be or when. When that happens, then the whole system can shift. And that's what happened there. And I've seen that in organizations, one conversation at a time. Which means you got to do a lot of talking. It's got to be purposeful. These are not one-off things that we're doing. If they were that simple, we wouldn't have to worry with it.
That's wonderful. And so if someone listening to this, you know, wants to get out their sledgehammer and be that one person who takes it to the problem, the wall, what can they do as an individual to bring this sort of thinking or this mindset to bear in their life on a daily basis?
That's an excellent question. And one of them is talking to others in the community. You know, is there something that really is serious, or is just this my own itch? begin to talk to people like me or others at Eckerd who were interested in trying to help facilitate this kind of thing to see what might happen and see what's possible. And maybe nothing's possible, or maybe there really is. We got to find out. We don't come with answers. We come with questions. And if it, it has to be serious, it has to be important, they begin to come together around that. So it's a matter of asking. Maybe talk to the Chamber of Commerce. Talk to you and find out. You're connected to many people, and you might be able to say, okay, let's get some people together and begin to start. And whenever you begin one of these things, one of the questions you always mull over is, who are the right people to be here? Well, Harrison Owen says that whoever's here are the right people. He does the open space technology. And so you begin. And don't get bogged down with a bunch of stuff at the beginning. Begin. It's so important to start. And both of these processes, strategic doing and the process Enneagram, solve real problems in the immediate time with real people. It's not a whole theoretical thing. Real people getting together with real problems, talking about it, and coming up with solutions that apply in the moment. It's not down the road. It's right now. What can we do right now? Maybe they're little things, and that's okay, because if they are, you learn with those. But then we can begin to build, and more things happen. And if you keep at it, it keeps building. Who do you know? Maybe I should talk to the guy next door. Or maybe I ought to talk to the police guys, because they maybe know somebody I ought to talk to. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've heard you on the radio, and I'll call you up. And you answer the phone, or you get back to them, rather than just never getting back, which has been an experience many people would have with some calls. You got to begin. But if it's an important problem, there are probably others who also share the same concern. How do we get our arms around this? How do we begin to engage in this? And there are ways to do it, and both strategic doing and the process Enneagram are very powerful, proven. 30 years we've been at this, developing them, and they work. Providing people are willing to talk about an important problem together.
And tell the truth.
Well, that's part of coming out. That's right. Telling the truth is an interesting thing, because with the conditions today, the truth may be different than tomorrow, with the conditions shifting. So we have to keep talking. Some truth is absolute, but there's a lot of stuff we talk about that I tell you with the best I can today, and tomorrow it may be obsolete because the world's shifted on me.
I miss the days of absolute truth.
But there's a lot we can talk about.
Yeah.
But we have to keep engaged in this process and keep the conversations, not just in one meeting and everything's fixed. That's not the way it is.
Wonderful. So thank you to Ernie Mahaffey, who connected us. You originally gave this talk with the ASPECT program at Eckerd College, and we'll make sure we add the materials from this talk to the article that accompanies this audio. I've enjoyed the conversation and appreciate the good work you've done in bringing people together and helping them solve complex problems for 30 years and developing the process Enneagram. It's a great legacy, and I appreciate you spending your time to share some of that with us today.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come together and talk about this kind of stuff. It's been a lonely journey as we've tried to develop these things, and lots of people don't want to listen. So thank you very much for having me come, and I hope it makes a difference.
Me too. It will.
Thank you.